Ladies and gentlemen, pay attention. This is your boy, the coach from the WWE. I would like to welcome you to the very first wrestling podcast in the world to take you on a weekly deep dive into classic matches along with legends of the squared circle. Enjoy the discussion. Enjoy the back and forth. There's so much to get into. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The Payoff.
Jeff, today's podcast is going to be the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. This is Tom. I'm with Jeff. This is The Payoff, and we are at SummerSlam 1991 in the Garden. Jeff, how you doing, my man?
We are celebrating SummerSlam right now, man. This is a great one. This is a great card. This is a great match. We got all kinds of good stuff, and I'm doing well, my friend. Just enjoying that shoot job, remote work, and doing this. You know, just good stuff.
I love to hear it, man. This is gonna be a fun one, dude. Plug our shit real quick.
Yeah, of course, everybody know, you know where to find us, everybody. Like, you could do the spiel for us. And so at Payoff Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, you know where to find us. Download, leave those positive reviews, spread the word about the show. You're on social media, you're interacting with us, you're seeing that stuff. You're probably seeing some of those new posts too, going back, you know, us celebrating a year now and being out there and doing what we're doing, trying to plug some of those older episodes. Maybe some of you new to the show forgot about, or, you know, hadn't heard about or want to revisit. Like, make sure to go back into those archives, check out some of that good stuff. You know, recently shared that stuff, Vicky Guerrero, you know, joining us, talking Eddie and Brock, and, you know, Shane Douglas talking the NWA title. Like, you know, that's all good stuff. And, you know, some, it was our early days and we were getting our footing and going, but you know, still really good conversations with some absolutely just phenomenal people in the industry. So,
dude, it's been a hell of a year. I forget about, I mean, all the matches we covered, all the guests we had. We did our live show. I mean, it's wild, man. There's been a lot has happened.
We had a crazy first year. From you and I just shooting the shit about wrestling, you know, to sitting and recording a show and talking to, you know, literal legends of the ring. Like, it's good stuff, man. Absolutely.
Well, and you know, one of the nice things that I enjoy about The Payoff is, unlike some of the podcasts I listen to, wrestling and otherwise, we don't sit here for 20 minutes bullshitting about something unrelated to wrestling that no one cares about. I find myself oftentimes during podcasts like, all right, how do I just keep hitting fast forward until I get past all the ads and all of the co-host bullshit to actually get to what I'm listening to? So we like to get right to business. So I'll throw it to you first. Brett, perfect 91 SummerSlam. Why did you want to cover this one?
So this one, this card, this match, everything actually has a special place in my heart. I don't even know if I told you this, but this was my first wrestling tape.
And wow.
So, SummerSlam 1991 and Survivor Series 1991, recorded by my aunt, VHS, of course, the tape. Those two tapes were given to me, and these were my first wrestling tapes ever. And so I am super excited to be covering this one, because it has been a long time since I've watched this match. I intentionally didn't watch it when we were planning, but there's parts of it that I remember just having it on and watching this match. And I know that the ending, I know I could still picture it. I'm going to get excited when it happens. I'm going to talk about it in the aftermath. This one means a lot to me. This is in my wrestling heart. This has got a place. How about
you? It's still real to him. Damn it.
It really is. Hey, you know what? It is.
It's weird because this wasn't my first, you know, tape like you. I still remember this match and this show really, really vividly. And it's not one that gets talked about a lot. It's not, you know, a WrestleMania or whatever. But, yeah, I remember this show really well. I remember a lot of the key spots of this match really well. I'm pumped to see it. I haven't gone back and watched it in a while. But I just remember this being great. I remember the hearts being there. And, I'm just pumped to cover it. And we'll get into the show and everything else. So, yeah, man, you ready to jump into it?
Let's do it. Like you said, let's not waste any time. Let's talk about this one.
All right.
Oh, it's time for the build.
So here we are, dude. Madison Square Garden. You ever been to the garden before?
I have not been to the... I've visited the area, seen it, taken pictures, but never been inside.
You get the gist of it, which is, for those that haven't been, it's just in the middle of the damn city, right? I mean, it's New York. It's all the buildings. It's huge. It's millions of people. And right in the middle of all kinds of crazy shit is Madison Square Garden. And you can take the train right there. The subway or train station. You're walking in Times Square and boom, you're in Madison Square Garden 3 minutes later, right? Just down the same street. So it's just really cool. I mean, if you're there for a wrestling show or a sports game, whatever, I used to go for the Big East tournament every year, but it's like, dude, you're just drinking beers in New York City. You're walking through Times Square. You're in the middle of all of it. And then, you know, a minute later, you're getting your ticket stamped and you're going into a sporting event or a concert, or whatever else. It doesn't get any better than this. The building itself, it's a cool spot. I mean, it's loud. It's great. So they renovated a few years ago. I haven't been there since then. Ironically, I was supposed to go to New York City this year before all this pandemic bullshit happened. And we were going to actually try to get last minute cheap tickets to Billy Joel inside the gardens. We thought that would be really good. But of course, that got canceled, as did our WrestleMania trip. So, you know, I had a WrestleMania trip for you. I had a New York City trip for my wife, you know, and there you go. My life partner and my podcast partner, I didn't get to go on trips with either of them.
Well, I'm sure I wouldn't take, precedence over your wife I'm sure.
Are you asking me if I had to choose one trip, which one would I choose?
I was going to go down that road. I was going to make you pick. Yeah.
Man, that was a pretty good WrestleMania card this year, huh?
Yeah, you don't have to answer on air, but yeah, that is that was
tough. What I was thinking about the other day, and we'll get into this. Taker, like 99.9% would have retired if he had the match versus AJ in a crowd.
Yep.
Now, he says he's retired, but bullshit, he's gonna wrestle probably another Saudi show, probably another WrestleMania. So it's just funny how we would have saw his final match, and him and AJ would have tore down the house because he's finally in great shape, as we found out from the documentary.
I'll say this, and then we'll get into the card.
Yeah.
How the last ride ended, I think it was far more open-ended than all the retirement talk that's happening. When he's like, if Vince called, I'd show back, you know, I'd be there. Which
he's not retiring.
No. Yep. And I am right there with you. I just think there's no way that we have seen, like, and granted, you know, he can go and do some of those cinematic, great, but that was a good match with AJ though, too. I'll give it that. But all right. So,
yeah, I just remember this show because there's kind of three key things that happen on this. There's really four, kind of five key things that I still remember. All of it's awesome. So the tagline's a match made in heaven, a match made in hell, because we had the main event, which was the hell part. And then the heaven part is Macho Man and Liz, who were actually way closer to getting divorced at this point, got married on air. They're getting divorced in real life as they're getting married in wrestling. So August 26, 1991, the Garden. We'll just cover the whole card because there's so much stuff here that's awesome. So Bulldog, Ricky Steamboat, who is really called the Dragon then, and the Texas Tornado, they're going to beat Power and Glory in the Warlord in a six-man tag match. So that starts us off. Just funny that you have six kind of big plotting guys, four plotting guys. Texas Tornado is a big guy, and then the Dragon, you know, kind of an odd six-man to start it. Then we go into the second match of the show, which in a lot of ways stole the show, the match we're going to cover, Hart and Perfect. Then, and there's some significance to this, natural disasters, earthquake and typhoon, defeating the Bushwhackers, but it was the last pay-per-view show that Andre the Giant was on. Obviously, barely able to get around, certainly wasn't wrestling, but he was on this show. Ah, man, you know.
He came out with the Bushwhackers. So, yeah, that was like,
yeah.
The Natural Disasters had Jimmy Hart and the Bushwhackers had Andre the Giant.
So yeah, kind of even it up and stuff. He obviously got a huge pop. God, just a shame. I mean, he was still a pretty relatively young man, of course. I mean, you know, it was clear he probably wasn't going to live till he was, you know, 100 years old. Right. Then we got Virgil defeating Ted DiBiase for the $1 million championship. If you remember, this was like an excellent undercard feud. You know, the Virgil DiBiase thing, it builds up for all that time. He finally turns on him. We get the WrestleMania match. Then we get this match where he, you know, wins for the title. I mean, great stuff. Again, a really great undercard feud. You weren't that. That's what one of the things we're lacking right now in wrestling is some of the undercard shit. It just nothing's happening. It's not interesting. It's just throwing stuff together. But, you know, there were some of the most memorable feuds were these great undercard stuff, right? Where it wasn't the main event, but it was awesome. Dan and Jeff, this is a match that we may cover here in August, but the Big Boss Man defeating the Mountie in the jailhouse match, which was awesome. That was a really good one. Then, and what a show this was. I actually want to go back and watch this entire show at some point. Then we get the Legion of Doom defeating the Nasty Boys in a street fight. Didn't really get many street fights in the early 90s WWF, but that's fun. Tag team championship match. Then IRS defeating Greg Valentine. And then finally, Hogan Warrior defeating the three-man team of General Adnan, Colonel Mustafa, and of course Sergeant Slaughter. It's a handicap match. And we got a referee who was Sid Justice, who was a good guy. And then obviously as we went into the fall and the winter, Sid Justice became a bad guy and headlined WrestleMania against Hulk Hogan. So sellout crowd, gate of almost 500,000. They do over 100,000 of merch. Great show. Quick couple other news items here for you. You know, we had this Randy Liz, marriage. Obviously Savage is retired because of the Warrior thing at WrestleMania 7, but then we're going to get this really great Jake Roberts angle. So that all kicks off at the end of this show. We'll cover that another time. Great stuff there. The Ultimate Warrior, he's going to hold Vince up for money, so he's done after this show. We wouldn't see him again until the end of WrestleMania 8 run-in. So again, Warrior, man, he's like the torchbearer, the champion at WrestleMania 6. He has that great match at 7 against Hogan, and then against Savage. And then, man, a couple months later, he's gone. So it's just crazy how within 18 months, he went from being the guy to out of work with them. And then of course he comes back at 8, and then 92 SummerSlam, he's in the world title picture against the retired Macho Man. And it's just, you know, and obviously Bruce Prichard covers a lot of this in his podcast, but man, what a just shit show the WWF was right now. So behind the scenes, and probably we lost out on a lot of what could have been really great stuff. Also, not long after this, Sergeant Slaughter turns face. He kind of joins up with Hacksaw Jim Duggan a little bit and cuts some face promos. I was trying to find when he came in and rescued Hacksaw. Couldn't find it, but I do want to find that because I think it would be really interesting. So I don't know, man. A lot going on, but I'll tell you what. You know, Jeff, we've covered a lot of great matches on The Payoff. What we often don't see are great cards where, man, top to bottom, you could sit there and watch all 2 hours and 45 minutes of that and be entertained. And that's what I think this card is. So great card. I'm pumped for you to give us the build to the IC title match. And I would say this is one of those cards where we've probably got a couple other matches that we're going to cover at some point.
And this is – there's a lot on that card.
Like, I know.
You know, and we want to cover a lot of these matches. We want, you know, we wanted Virgil even to come on to talk about that $1 million belt match. Like
Virgil. So for the record, Virgil stood us up. I was in our sound studio getting ready to record that. He stood us up, man. We had like five matches we wanted to do with Virgil. Very disappointing.
Couldn't bring the meat sauce. Yeah.
If you ever wonder why we don't do guests every week, try getting in touch with and scheduling a former professional wrestler. They're not right. The most tech savvy, easiest people to coordinate with. They don't exactly have, computers and calendars and, any sense of organization, but they're great right. people. and they entertained us. So we love them anyways.
Yeah, it was good stuff. So what do we got here for the build? All kinds of stuff happened. So you had, it was May 1990, and you know, remembering that this event, SummerSlam, took place August 1991. So, but we're going to start, like I said, with this May 1990. You had Mr. Perfect. He was participating. It was a tournament for the Intercontinental Championship. It was actually the Warrior had the belt, and as we've covered before, vacated the title after winning the championship at WrestleMania 6. So Perfect winning that tournament has the Intercontinental belt. He actually beat Jimmy Snuka. He beat Tito Santana. These matches too took place on Superstars. And so not a big push, but Tom and I've talked about this a lot before. This is that time when the Intercontinental title was, it definitely had a lot more distinction than it has now. And so not hot-shotting anything like that, you know, doing a tournament to kind of see who was this, you know, who was this person that was going to have this belt. Now, one of the things we got to start bringing in, you had really Mr. Perfect working with Bobby Heenan as his perfect manager, you know, making a bunch of successful title defenses, all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, just kind of going through the motions here with the belt. He actually lost it to that 1990 SummerSlam to the Texas Tornado. Interesting that, you know, kind of how that played out. It just a little bit of back and forth. But what you had, though, was then Survivor Series. You had the perfect team, you know, taking on the Ultimate Warrior. You had really this Heenan family. It was part of this that really group that had a lot of different people, but at the time you had Mr. Perfect. There, you know, a lot of different people actually that he was kind of managing, but almost like a really modified heel stable of all these different people. And so you had the Barbarian was a part of it as well too. Haku. So it was just, you know, these, the Texas Tornado, Legion of Doom, Warrior would always take on like the Heenan family. And it was just kind of interesting how it would play out and all this different stuff. So fast forward a little bit now, you're at WrestleMania 7. You had Perfect. He has the strap once again. He beat the Big Boss Man at WrestleMania 7. It was actually retained it by disqualification. You know, and again, the Heenan family playing a role in that as well too. So, and a lot of this too, it's interesting because I guess I wasn't watching TV wrestling as much, but these things were happening on Superstars, Saturday Night Main Event. Like these things were, you know, primetime wrestling. This was not, you know, like we all think about like Monday Night Raw or anything like that. Like, you know, it was happening, but you know,
yeah, it was back when we didn't have to watch 8 hours of this shit every single week plus a 5-hour pay-per-view.
So
it's a job now.
Right. And so you have, he had been aligned with Bobby Heenan, which I remember, like, I guess that's how I associate Mr. Perfect so much is with Bobby Heenan, especially some of those vignettes. And we, you know, hear the stories of like Perfect would like, it'd be like one take and he'd sink the basketball from half court. He would throw a football like 70 yards, like it was nothing, like, you know, all that stuff. But I always associate him to be with that. But, you know, it just some of those things of kind of, you know, how he would just really conduct himself in. So as we'll see in this match, Mr. Perfect is with the coach, who is now Bobby Heenan, is not his manager anymore. He's with the coach. Tom, do you know any backstory on the coach or who he was? Or
zero.
So the coach did have a little bit of a wrestling career, had a little bit more time doing managing and all that other stuff, but he ended his career after he was aligned with Mr. Perfect. And a spoiler on the aftermath for the coach on this one, he actually went on and he did the color commentary for the, as we've all seen on the Dark Side of the Ring, the UWF promotion. And so he was the commentator for the UWF from about 1992 until the end of it, managing some people too, including like Cactus Jack, Mick Foley, Cowboy Bob Orton. And so just kind of interesting, the coach, you know, didn't think of it, but he's out there. So the coach, there you go, John Tolos. So, but interesting kind of just a little background on that one. So now interesting with this too, and a part of the pretense for this match is we're now in like June and we have the coach is Mr. Perfect's new manager. I couldn't figure out exactly how it happened, but, and it may have just been because of, you know, a long career and kind of what he was doing, but Mr. Perfect had a terrible back, like a lot of back injuries. They knew he needed to go. He knew he needed to drop the strap. He was in extreme pain going into this match. They had kept him off of, I say, TV for a while, out of house shows. He wasn't wrestling much. And so because they didn't want to exacerbate his back, is you know, the Perfect Plex, the move, you know, there just a lot of torque on the back and everything like that. And so they wanted to make sure that, you know, being the heel, he'd lose, you know, he'd win by DQ, he'd win by count out. Like, there was all these different ways that he would kind of, you know, finagle things. So we got to this match, though, because, speaking for Bret Hart, so that year, 1990, actually, we got to remember this was at the heart of this is when the Hart Foundation was really at the height of what they were doing, that early Hart Foundation. And so
the golden era of tag team wrestling, too. I mean, look at all these names of tag teams you're mentioning.
Exactly. And so we've got all this, like, you know, it was interesting how this played out, because, you know, Brett had been a part of the Hart Foundation, and then they broke up. It was actually, you know, with this was right around the time too that the Rockers were breaking up as well too, or broke up. You know, have all these different things that were kind of happening. And then we get this really a month or two after the Hart Foundation is no more and they've kind of disbanded, Brett is going into this really feud and match with Mr. Perfect. He didn't have a singles run at this point. We always think of Brett at the height of his game. This is, I say, a young Brett, where he hadn't won a championship yet, you know, a singles championship. He had all these different, you know, things that as we associate with him, he hadn't accomplished yet. And so you've got these two guys, though, that really it was set up. I have no other word for it than perfect for these guys to have this match and go into this together. So, Tom, any thoughts on the build from you?
No, man, just like I said, those tag teams you rattled off were just all awesome. So it was great. I'm pumped to jump into this one. We're at the 19-minute mark on SummerSlam 1991 on the WWE Network. So if you want to watch it with us, 19-minute mark on the dot, SummerSlam 1991. Jeff, are you ready, man?
Let's rock and roll, my friend.
All right. It's time for the payoff.
Ho! It's time for the payoff.
All right. They're in the ring. They're ready to go. Who you got in this one?
Me? It just kind of like initial, you got to go with Brett. You know, that there's just no other way to cut it at this time. You know, I was a big Bret Hart fan, you know, playing the face, like you got to go out of the gate. You figure you got to go with Bret.
So let me throw something interesting at you is I started thinking off the top of my head, man, this was like an incredible SummerSlam match. And then I was like, well, wait a second. 92, the year after, was him and Bulldog. That was a great match. And I was like, well, Owen in 94, that was an awesome cage match. So I was like, is Bret Hart Mr. SummerSlam? So as we're getting this match started, Perfect's kind of being the chicken shit heel on the outside. Let me walk through what Bret Hart did at SummerSlam. So first ever SummerSlam, he's in a tag team championship match against Demolition. So, you know, great little start to his SummerSlam career there. All right, so that was 88. Then we go into 89. All right, and Bret Hart is, let's see, what's he doing in this one? He is not on, oh no, I'm sorry. That was the Brain Busters. So they had a 16-minute tag match to start the show against the Brain Busters, who were Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. But that was a pretty good match, okay? So that's 89, and then 90, he would be, let's see, I think he had a good tag match in this one too. Hart Foundation getting the tag titles back by defeating Demolition in a 2 out of 3 match, which you didn't see many 2 out of 3 fall matches back then. So that's pretty cool.
That was a smash and crash, yep.
Yeah, so obviously, Crush.
Crush, sorry, oh boy. Yep. Sorry, internet. Crush and smash. My bad.
No. In that one, that was that crush instead of axe and smash?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two out of three.
Yeah. Okay. So 90, 91, we know. 92, again, is him and Bulldog, which was awesome. 93. Let's see. What did they? Oh, that was him and Doink the Clown. Okay. So that's how we're using Bret Hart at SummerSlam 93. Lex and Yoko were the main event, but man, hard to believe we couldn't find something better for Bret Hart. So that was 93. 94 is the great cage match against Owen. 95, I want to say it was Isaac Yankum. Am I right? Not yes, sure. I'm right. And a DQ, 16 minutes, Bret Hart and Isaac Yankum. Not the best use of Bret again. 96, we had him. Not on that show, because that was the year after Sean beat him for the title. And then 97, his last year, that was him and Taker in the main event. So, and that was a really good match, Sean as the referee. So a lot of good SummerSlam matches from Bret Hart. Arguably, this is probably your second best one. Actually, I don't know. You had him, Bulldog, and Owen. So those three, and I think any of them you could say was anywhere 1 to 3 in terms of best to worst. But we're here to watch him in perfect with Hebner as the ref and the coach cheering him on.
Yep, there you go. Like this one, and this match too, like I say a slow start. You got to remember too, like perfect, he's hurt. And so
remember, this was his last match until the following
year.
Yeah. Yes, Survivor Series 92, and that was kind of a shock that he came back.
Yeah, and so, and we'll talk about that one in the aftermath, but I still very much vividly remember, especially this with like Bret keeping him on the mat a lot. Like I say, a lot of just down time in the match, but still working like big time. But, and these guys, like, you know, I picture back like already, like they're showing just they are compatible in the ring like a lot of other wrestlers are not together, and so it's really interesting to watch them work together. And it's just like, God, like you and I have a bad back and we're like, oh boy, I should just stay in bed all day. Dude's about to have a fucking 20 minute match. Like,
you can't, you know, tell. I mean, maybe later on the match, but as of right now, you really can't tell. I mean, I guess he's kind of hunched over, but you just never know, you know.
And I'm kind of, and I've been kind of watching for it too, but he has shown no signs of it at all. And that's, I mean, what do you expect? It's Mr. Perfect, you know, that's how it is.
Yeah. I love Bret Hart's parents being here. I just thought it added like an element to the match. Like how often did you see, you know, guys' parents, you know, and I just thought that was a really cool thing. And obviously it made sense with them because the family lineage and stuff. But again, it just added something to the character and to the match to have his parents there.
I do remember thinking back too, that was always like, it was always a point of commentary bringing up of like the Stu Hart dungeon, like, you know, and I still to this day remember, you know, they're showing him in the crowd too now, like thinking like, God, like that was where wrestlers went to be trained. Like that was the only place that they could go to learn to be a wrestler, where if you didn't go to, like, you know, the Stu Hart dungeon to learn the ropes of wrestling, like you weren't a true wrestler.
Oh yeah. 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 At one point or another, you had to pass through Calgary, right? It was kind of like a rite of passage. So many guys were at least up there and worked some tours and stuff. And I don't know if you read Bret Hart's book or not. It's that or Mick Foley's original book are probably my two favorite. The Bret Hart book was awesome. And yeah, it's one of the things he talks about is those drives to, I mean, they just awful drives in these like vans from like one remote town in Western Canada to another. Just brutal. Brutal.
Yeah, and now that we know kind of the stories too, like, you know, the time has revealed a lot of the secrets of all that and stuff too, like, it was hell. like, you know, it wasn't like, you know, restrictions and, you know, the you know, health sir, or, you know, worker comp and all this other shit. Like, you know, it wasn't a thing. And looking at the match too, I think it's interesting too. You got Mr. Perfect kind of working over like his gear getting ripped and kind of playing up that angle of these guys just kind of going at each other. I like the kind of look that he's got kind of playing that up.
Well, and Perfect allowed him to rip the shirt off like that. It was like a Brett took it as like kind of like a nod to, you know, really getting him over. Like he really appreciated Perfect allowing him to do that and stuff. So that was, you know, that was done intentionally. Oh, pretty good bump there.
Right into the whoever that guy is. Yeah, taking it. It looking a little awkward. Yeah.
Didn't see a lot of that in 91, but man, stuff like that meant something. Now you see that on Raw and you're just so immune to it. But like back then, I mean, like Brett selling it stuff too. I mean, it just less is more, man. Some of this stuff.
Well, and this is one of those, like you and I talk about, like the storytelling in the ring, like, you know, there's a way to do it. Like why, you know, why isn't there more of that? And that's, you know, you and I, we kind of following the ratings and things like that. Quick roll up here from Brett. Oh, and the fan, you can tell the fans into it.
Yeah.
All of them got on their feet with a very quick roll up. And that is, I remember that like just so vividly from Brett of getting those kind of, you know, he was the technical superstar. Like he was able to reverse anything.
Excellence of execution.
Exactly. And to be able to kind of reverse those kind of moves into doing that. And but Mr. Perfect though, immediately right back to the heel tactics, if you will, of just kicking the crap out of Brett. And this is, you know, so much, even the matches we've watched, like Brett is in his, I really want to say this is before he was in his prime in a lot of ways of, you know, he was still a fan favorite. Like people loved him. Oh, that whip just so hard into the corner.
Yeah, when he takes that and then when he later on his career started taking it like to the front, like to the sternum. Oh my God. Like I so cringe every time I see that.
And I like it just no amount of training. You can't, you know, full speed sprint into, you know, a turnbuckle like that. So, and again, Perfect. Like he's not showing any signs of his back being just fucked 60 different ways. Like
yeah.
He's moving around. He's not really, you know, he's not hesitating in any way, but then using, you know, just the heel tactics to kind of, I think, slow it down a little bit. There's a little bit of that too. I think that just to kind of hide some of it, but also, you know, we didn't know how good of a worker Brett was back then either. Like now we know, like you said, Brett's, they're putting each other over. They're working hard to protect each other and just be great in the ring together.
Well, pretty interesting, you know, 18 months for Perfect. So after this match, he took the long break. Then he's doing heel commentary on Superstars, which I thought he was a great heel commentator. And then, you know, they had him on like Monday on primetime as one of like the panelists. And I thought he was great in that role. And then, of course, he's Ric Flair's executive consultant, I believe is what they called him. So, you know, Flair obviously becomes champ and the great promo after Royal Rumble 92. And then we had the, you know, the WrestleMania 8 match. So again, then Perfect, you know, Survivor Series 92, Randy Savage's mystery partner because Warrior walked out again.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that gets, and then fast forward to January of 93, this, believe the second ever Monday Night Raw was the one where Flair loses to Perfect in a loser leaves town match. So what a just wild 18 months, man. But again, there's just that behind the scenes stuff is just fascinating at this period of time.
Something I want to point out.
And here, how about this with Hebner actually being a ref? And it's like, he pushed him back. He's like one more time. Like now, and I think Eric Bischoff brought this up recently on his podcast, dude, the refs have no – what's the purpose of the ref anymore?
Yeah. There is – yeah. Oh, no, absolutely.
And it hurts the product. It's right. Like, well, then why aren't these guys just having a street fight? Why aren't they just punching each other in the mouth if the referee, the official, doesn't matter? Oh, how about this? That's good.
And you and I have talked about before, like he's not inserting himself into the match, which we've seen too much of that too, of like they get too involved in what's happening or their mannerisms are too, you know, just exaggerated to bring too much attention to them. Like, I don't care what the ref's doing. Like, you know, it's not why I'm watching. I find it interesting too. And I don't know if you've kind of seen it throughout this match. Oh, that was great. Into the headlock, kind of swung around him to get it. And you just don't see it anymore. But if you notice all the kids like in the aisleway, like running down to kind of like watch the match and like wearing the Bret Hart glasses and stuff, it's so rare to see that nowadays in wrestling, like just fans being, other than like, you know, some pay-per-views, like fans being excited to, you know, kind of watch wrestling and be a part of it. And granted, yeah, in these times we can't, you know, get fans, but there's this couple right on the aisle, like bring back the foam fingers. I'd buy myself a foam finger at my next show. Like, you know, kind of doing shit like that. Like you just don't see it anymore.
I just think it meant so much more to go to a live anything mm-hmm. in 1991 than 2020. Like now it's like, man, you got a 70-inch TV on your wall and surround sound and, you know, you feel more connected to these celebrities because of social media. I mean, in 1991, it was like, holy shit, I get to see Bret Hart. I get to see Hulk Hogan in person. It just mm-hmm. mattered so much more. So people just enjoyed it more. There was more of a buzz in the air. You know, this shit now obviously so overexposed. So it's like, I mean, I see Seth Rollins wrestle 50 times a year. Oh, who cares? Like, right? Like, right. It was a big deal. Like, Intercontinental title, that's a really important title. And, you know, some great wrestlers have held it. And we know it's the stepping stone to the world title. Warrior had it. Savage had it. You know, like, this is a big, big deal. And this is a big match, man. And of course, there's probably a much higher percentage of people that, you know, think it's real. So, perfect flex attempt. He's got him.
Got him. One, two.
Oh! I didn't remember him kicking out of that.
I didn't either.
That's a rare finisher being kicked out of in 1991. That's for sure. Wow.
What's the fans doing? Can we get a little sound here? It looks like we get a little bit.
Yeah, a little here. Sound. I'm not in my normal recording, so TV's a little further away from me. Let me see what I can do, though.
Even that line alone, like too much taken out of Mr. Perfect, like just that little bit of selling.
But you lose yourself in it, man. Like I'm sitting yep. here, I'm like, oh man, Perfect's reeling. Like,
oh, that was so cool.
Yeah, you can tell it was back there. So Brett's on the attack.
But it puts the heel over in a way that, you know.
Now he's down. Oh, good bump there.
I forgot about the slide, too. Yeah. Kind of missing. I think he missed the turn post a little bit, but it actually looked worse. So,
yeah.
You know, that was the way to do it. Hart setting him up for a suplex here. Yep.
Oh, good little suplex. I like that.
Man, and at that point, too, like that's just.
Excellently executed.
13 minutes in, or, you know, well, yeah, 13, 14 minutes in here and like, you know, doing this type of shit. It's still just mind boggling to me, but yeah.
Small package.
But Brett trying to get him. Yeah. So to your point though, yeah, I'm with you of like the overexposure. I think it speaks to like a lot of the drama gets lost because I think like, and you and I've talked about it. We, you know, you see it in the dirt sheets, like the reality era, like we're in the reality era, but they're not like Vince doesn't want that. Like
we're in the reality era now.
Yeah.
Still too much cartoon bullshit for me.
No, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like we like there is so much that like that's happening in real life, and we always joke like, you know, we, like certain things happen. We're like, well, that's going to get worked into a storyline or something like that. Like certain times that's appropriate, but then like you said, like the Lashley. Like, you know, Rusev, Lana, like crazy, like marriage angle. Like, I don't have time for that. Like, I don't like that. But at the same time, like you and I watched that graveyard match and we're like, yeah, that's Undertaker's best match in 5 years, 10 years. Like, you know, so it's such a weird
needle to thread.
Yeah.
Here's what's so funny though. It's like, you're the Lashley, like Lana thing. You're like, this is so stupid. But then think about the Triple H Steph angle where he marries her. It's just a classic angle. So much of it's just, I think it's more about the characters just aren't resonating. Like, what do I really care about Bobby Lashley? I don't.
Well, and they had that they had the karaoke match or like sing off. Like I didn't even watch
it. Look at Perfect just bumping, man. This he's is doing incredible. Like
total flipping onto his head as Brett is kicking out his legs. But who wants to watch? I tune in to watch wrestling, not karaoke. Like, you know, and they even said like the dirt sheet, like, you know, that was the worst match or that was the worst segment easily of 2020. And there's been a lot of bad ones.
Dude, I've been watching way less current product. That being said, like, I still watch all the pay-per-views.
Oh, there's the dirty heel move there. Don't see it enough.
Yeah, Perfect either is selling or he's in tremendous pain. And my guess, based on what you shared, he is in tremendous back pain right now. So, yeah,
Brett's
there we go. Little leg drop, right? Or no, just kind of he's going
to. I wonder if he's going to. It looks like he was going for the sharpshooter. Yep. Yeah, kicking out. And so Brett kind of struggling from the groin shot now. And so when Hebner was distracted after a coach was up on the ring, that kick up, incredible. Like,
yeah, just, you know, dropping just after, legs.
Yep, dropping, you know, between Brett's legs. Yeah, just crazy. Going for it. Oh, there's the block. Yep, there you go. And Brett trying to reverse. Yep, got him. There it is. And this is what I still remember.
This is nuts.
Cranking back on it. Yep. It's just quick, but that, just that Brett counter to get the W. Good stuff, though.
Yeah, see right here, takes off the outfit. Like, yeah, that was, Brett, he did that to, like, get him over, yeah.
Yeah, Brett ripping off the rest of Perfect's singlet, really. So, Perfect just in his underwear trunks now at this point.
That iconic Bret Hart with the blue on, you know, with the tights on his shoulder. Yep.
And yeah, look at the crowd just losing their mind. Oh, yeah. Yep, Gorilla calling it.
A great, great build. It meant something to give him the Intercontinental title.
But
first singles championship after a great tag run. I mean, it had everything you needed, man. This is fantastic.
So, ready to get into what happened after this?
Yeah, yeah. It's always interesting, too. Like, Brett was always just a little ahead of Shawn Michaels, huh? Just in terms of, like, left the tag team a little earlier, became IC title a little bit earlier, world champion a couple years earlier. So, all right, yeah, let's go ahead and jump into the aftermath.
Ho! It's time for the aftermath.
All right, what'd you think?
Great stuff. Like, just absolutely great stuff. We kind of still have it on now. Brett's in the crowd getting hugs from the family, Stu and Mom. Like, you know, just really good stuff. So, and the match overall was, it was good. What about you?
Let me hit you with something. So, Mr. Perfect, if you look at his career, I don't think he was underrated, but I do think he underachieved.
Yeah, and I wonder if that was the booking that he was giving. I wonder.
Yeah, no. I don't know. I mean, maybe they didn't have confidence in him, but I mean, like, a fair comparison, you talk about, like, great heels would be like a Rick Rude. But Rick Rude, you know, main evented a SummerSlam in a cage match against, you know, the Ultimate Warrior. I don't know. I just, like, you know, Perfect had those great vignettes and, you know, he did some great stuff, but I don't know, man. It just felt like there was, I don't know. Something was just missing from his, like, in-ring wrestling career. Even like when he beat Flair in January of 93, like, that didn't have much build because Flair was on his way out. You know, there was some Perfect Hogan, yeah, house show main events, but, like, we never really got one on, like, a big show. You know, Perfect didn't have, like, a great WrestleMania match. I don't know. It's like, I mean, I love the guy, but there just isn't, like, a, if you really have to, you know, think about it, there's just not a massive body of work. I mean, this is what, probably the best match of his career that we just watched. So this is about, I mean, this is it for Mr. Perfect. I don't know. I just, do you agree, disagree?
Yeah, I think it's just one of those where, you know, especially like him working hurt and putting on the match that he did, like you really have to almost give him more credit than you would under normal circumstances, because just, you know, doing what he's doing and Brett being healthy, like just crazy. Yeah, absolutely.
I just feel like, you know, and again, I love Mr. Perfect. I hate being critical, but you know, if I say to you like, hey, give me some other great Mr. Perfect matches, you know, you come up with a couple, but you know, give me some great Mr. Perfect moments. Yeah. The vignettes when he debuted were great, but it's like, where's the great WrestleMania match? Where's some of the other great matches? And I understand we didn't have 12 pay-per-views and 52 Raws back then. I just wish there was more from him, man. He's just one of those guys. I just wish there was more. I don't know. I wish he wouldn't have got hurt. I wish maybe a heel world title run, but they didn't really push guys his size back then. So I don't know. Only other thing I want to share, Jeff, before we jump into the reviews are I have a list of the top Bret Hart matches of all time. Him and Mr. Perfect were actually on there twice. So I'll just quickly count down because this is fun, and this may give some of our listeners some homework in terms of matches they forgot about or want to watch. The 10th best match of Bret Hart's career was Benoit at WCW Mayhem 1999. That took place in Toronto. 9 was his 93 King of the Ring semifinal match against Mr. Perfect. So after Perfect came out of retirement, be a fun one to go back and watch. 8 was Benoit again. This was the Owen Hart tribute match. It was a great, great match on Nitro. 7 was Hart Austin at Survivor Series 96. That was the one after his long layoff. 6 was versus Mr. Perfect, the one we just watched. 5 was Bulldog at SummerSlam 92. 4 was Owen at WrestleMania 10. 3 was Owen at the 94 SummerSlam in the old blue cage match. Number 2 was Austin at WrestleMania 13. And then number 1 was the Iron Man match. People either think the Iron Man match is the best of Bret's career, they think it sucked, you know. There's never much in between on that match. People either loved it or hate it. I'm in the love camp. So that's all I got, man. Let's talk reviews and payoff scores, dude.
Yeah, so little things, though, like the aftermath, just kind of what happened with these guys, though, too. You had, like we said, Henning out for a while, getting, you know, the back surgery kind of, you know, gone for a while. He came back. He was actually did commentary for a while. And so that's if we remember back to, like, a lot of these matches in 91, 92 where he was on commentary. It's because he was hurt. And so that's why we see a lot of that. But eventually, like we said at the, you know, beginning here, he came back. It was his I say re-debut or return. It was that Survivor Series where you had Henning and Savage actually teaming up to win a match. And so just kind of, you know, interesting how that played. He then went on to kind of feud with Ric Flair, who had the championship at that time. And so it kind of saw his, you know, rise. Kinda, I almost feel like it was slowed a little bit because of the injury, which is unfortunate, which, you know, you see that guy that, you know, is doing well and, you know, potentially poised to do well and then gets hurt. So it's always unfortunate. So, Hart actually his first defense of the Intercontinental belt was at this Tuesday in Texas pay-per-view. That's one too. I had forgotten about that. That was even a thing, but it was not a good show. And so that's one that we can review on a different day. I had a very deep, dark match card, but then a very bad, just, you know, overall it was not a great card to begin with. So, but he actually beat the undefeated Skinner at the point. And so that was his first major title defense. You know, talked about the Mountie a little bit on this show. It was actually, he was in a feud with the Mountie for a little while as well too. And so kind of having that back and forth where he actually dropped the belt to the Mountie, but Brett, then like Roddy Piper getting involved, Brett pinning Piper, but then also, you know, he had won the belt back. It was WrestleMania 8, which was 1992. And so, you know, kind of interesting. And it was actually, you know, he did one of the claims of fame there was like pinning Piper was a big deal as well too. But then too, you start getting into this like really summer 1992, kind of late 1992, where Hart starts taking on Shawn Michaels, the first ever ladder match, all that stuff. And so that's when you start getting into that, I say that area of Brett's career that is a lot, more times than not focused on a lot more. So good stuff though. So, So like you said, though, where are we at with the reviews, kind of all that good stuff? PWI trying to drop that one on you. So right now, I thought this was interesting. Brett was 21 that year.
Okay.
Mr. Perfect was 13. Half a year, and it was ranked that high. And so I thought that was great. And so
must have loved his work.
That's just one of those things. Yeah. So, so interesting write up here, and it kind of got to take this into account for the overall, that, and this was voted best match on the card as well too. So, Bret Hart pinning Mr. Perfect to win the Intercontinental title, an excellent match that easily stole the show. Believe it or not, and this is an observer, believe it or not, even though Perfect worked the match in great pain, he'll be out of action for an indefinite amount of period. In some ways, the back injury made him an even better worker. Perfect's deal before getting hurt a few months back was to take one unbelievable bump after another, which can carry a match when he's working with a guy who won't do anything. But in this case, while he did a few big bumps, for obvious reasons, he had to limit both their number and their wildness and was forced into wrestling a serious style match. This match was slightly better than 4 stars, but after all the near falls when it looked as though one was going to have to do something spectacular to win, the actual finish was ridiculous because the guy gave up the second the hold was on without even pretending to struggle, which is the only negative thing about the match. 4 stars. I will say it was a quick bell.
Yeah, just I don't know if he was like in legitimate pain or he probably did it to just get over the sharpshooter. But man, it was like the crowd didn't have time to react because once they like had that delayed reaction, they went nuts. But, you know, if you had held a minute for, 10 seconds, they would have all been on their feet and it would have been a really cool finish.
And the image that has always been seared in my head since I had this was a VHS was when Brett really cranks back on it, which is just, it's the sharpshooter. That's what I want to see, where he's just laying back into it to really get it, give it another 2-3 seconds. And he would have been like, snapping him back even further. It would have looked that great. So 4 stars, which, that's good. So just a kind of another review I read here was that Brett, his first singles title, incredible. Perfect's performance is one of the gutsiest thing I've ever seen. Brett was his usual fantastic self. The crowd was insane and they succeeded in making Brett look like a star. Two of the best ever having their most famous match, and yet I still prefer their King of the Ring match 2 years later. That's how good they were. So which that is one I had forgotten about, that they went again as well, yeah, too. So, so that's one that we'll kind of add to the short list of things that we want to do. And so, so 4 stars on that one. Tom, what's your score? What are your thoughts? Agree, disagree? What are you thinking?
Agreed with the reviews. Yeah. The end was, the end, if you could have just, I love the reversal. It just needed to be set in a little bit longer, but whatever. Man, the match was really good. The crowd reaction being above average, the fact that it was the coronation and a big, important first singles title for Bret Hart, who would obviously go along to have an incredible Hall of Fame career. His parents being there, the ripping off of the tights and kind of how memorable that was. For all of that, I got this thing at a 7.5. Arguably an 8, but I'll give it a 7.5. I thought it was really well done. The entire match was just fast paced and awesome. Loved it. Iconic moment, fun match, never boring, very athletic. Perfect was great, especially knowing the injury. So big fan of this one, man. A 7.5, but a really good 7.5. What about you, man?
I'm going to go just a little bit stronger and give it that 8. Okay. I think that is one that, yeah, it's part of it is, the nostalgia of this one for me is so much stronger. Because like I said, I associate this card or this pay-per-view with just my, first, illegal experience with tape trading and all that stuff. So, good stuff though. But yeah, I think that too, like it really solidified these guys as just being great. imperfect and, you know, just executing, you know, fantastic. And it's hard, you know, and while the match, yeah, I think that, you know, sure, could they have done maybe some more high flying things? Could they maybe done some crazier spots? I don't think I would have wanted that. I think that having like the more technical match made this worth it, because that's how I've always, like, that's how I envisioned Brett. You got the perfect plex, which, you know, makes sense, you know, the finisher and kind of having that. You got the, you know, the, I say the submission kind of type finisher. Yeah, I just think that it's one that it's just one of those where if you want to tell somebody like, hey, I can almost put it on my list of like, you know, a match that, you know, want people to watch to get a vibe for wrestling, this would be a good one. So good stuff. Give it an 8.
All right, man. I think we're pretty locked in. Both loved it. Great match. And yeah, you know, we said it before, one of my big takeaways from this one is just what a good show this was. So I feel like this is something I'm going to throw on at some point soon and watch. It was really good, but fun match, fun show, fun pay-per-view. Yeah, man, it's another good one. I think we got to keep hitting these SummerSlam matches over the next month or so.
Next couple of weeks. Yeah, that's good stuff. So awesome. All right, buddy. So I gotta wrap it up, wrap us up here, and then I'll kick it back to you. But of course, we say at the start, at Payoff Pod, you know where to find us. Here, we're going to be out there. Make sure to go back, check out those archives. We always got big stuff happening. We got big news coming. You know, we're enjoying what we're doing, so we're going to keep bringing it to you. So, Tom, you got a good finish for us this week? Maybe a perfect finish? What are you thinking?
You know, I don't. We're recording this later at night than usual.
This is late. Yeah, that's okay.
I don't have anything witty. I wake up at 4 a.m. and I usually go to bed in about an hour. So nothing witty for you, but great show. And as always, thank you for joining us on The Payoff.